Welcome back to Stitch Files with Baird in America. Brandon.
Bob.
That's it.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for tuning in. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. So we are going to discuss what makes a Baird-in a Baird-in.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. But I want to say that I had an enjoyable time at the sales meeting.
Yes. We just we had a sales meeting 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. No. Was that right?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I was out of town. I'm getting a spam message here or a spam call. I need to kill that.
Spam likely?
Yeah. A couple of us have been under the weather. Well, there's only two of us.
A couple of us.
I caught the germ. I caught the C germ. And it is still kicking my butt a little bit. Don't worry, I'm not contagious. You can't catch it over the airwaves. No,
but I could, being mere feet from you.
No. And I've got to give it to somebody. So, no, I wouldn't be here if I were contagious. But, yes, it is. I'm still not over it. And you've got a sinus infection.
I've had it for, this is day 14.
Yeah. So, we are both the walking wounded. So, if you hear a lot of throat clearing.
Belches.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You may hear a burp. You may hear a.
You can say fart.
No, I was going to. I'm like, that's poor taste. But you said it, so whatever.
Yeah. One of us might fart.
One of us might.
Stay tuned.
Probably the older one. Yeah, we had a good sales meeting. We did. It was good. Good to see everyone. It was your first sales meeting. Mm-hmm. Baird. Yeah,
my first time meeting everybody. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah, obviously COVID put a stop on meetings there for a while. We hadn't had one since, I think, didn't we say 2019 is our last sales meeting. We try to have them once a year, if not once a year, every other year. And it's just nice to get everybody together, all the guys, and, you know, go over some things, reinforcement, anything new that we've got coming out. And sometimes we forget things, and it's good to go back and just reinforce.
I was trying to thought. Reinforce things.
Reinforce things.
Yeah. No, I think, I don't remember who said it. Maybe it might have been Gary. We're talking about, like, we take for granted how great a Baird-in is because we're around it all the time.
I think I said that.
Was it you?
It was me. And see?
No, it was Gary.
No.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what spurred this podcast, is talking about everything that kind of makes us the best.
Yeah, it does. And we do take it for granted. Brandon's right about that. We forget about it because we're around it all the time.
Yeah.
It's like you forgetting what a good father you have because you're around him all the time.
Literally all the time.
But you know, sometimes you need to stop and take stock in what a good dad you have.
I agree. And I stopped going to the gym just because I've spent enough time. Like, I need a little bit of reprieve.
People are going to start talking.
Yeah.
There's more to it than.
But, that was kind of what spurred this podcast, was just going over those things that you know. But, you know, we're talking to customers and stuff. And some stuff you just sort of glance over because it's like, wow, I know that, you know. It's good to kind of refresh those things, and I think they're good selling points for the machine.
Well, they are, and a lot of these things, customers who own Baird-ins probably don't even know this either.
Yeah.
You know, they just know they've got a good machine that does what it's supposed to do, and that they get quality stitching off of it, you know, good service and support, and they take all that stuff for granted. And we've heard other people say, matter of fact, I had someone tell me today that they were frustrated because they could not get a Baird-in because of the delays in shipping and supply chain issues. So they bought another brand, and they said, you know, that was the biggest mistake I ever made.
I've seen that comment too.
And he said, I sold it for about a $4,000 or $5,000 loss. So, and I'm not happy about that. And I really mean that. I never want any embroidery customer to have to go through problems with their machine, no matter what brand it is. I'm truly not. But
at the end of the day, if you're happy with your machine, it's sewing good, whatever brand it is, good for you.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sincere when I say that. I mean, at some point in time, I always I always think even if you buy Brand X, that at some point in time, we'll probably get your business if you stay in business long enough. And that comes true more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and I'm, you know, again, I don't wish anybody any ill will. I want everybody to be successful, be happy, and don't sew your fingers together.
Yeah.
That's my motto.
Don't get your udder caught in the
right
take up lever.
So the studio has been changed.
It has? What happened? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The CO1 is back, and the two heads are gone.
The two heads in Cleveland.
Devastated.
Yes. That was Brandon's favorite machine. Is that your all-time favorite machine?
No.
It's not?
The CO1's my favorite.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's back. It's in its rightful position.
I have a very special place for that two-head because I hated it so much when I thought of the idea of it coming out until I got to sew it.
I think it made a believer out of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good machine. And the CO1 has always been here. It's just been behind the camera.
Yeah.
And we just rearranged. Well, not we. When I was out last week, Brandon rearranged the office, and he did a good job.
I did. I straightened up.
We got, you can't see it. We got trade show stuff back there, which trade shows will be starting back up here in about another month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that at the end of the podcast toward the end. But the task at hand is what makes a Berrettin a Berrettin.
Yep. So I think we'll probably start with the chassis of the machine, which is probably, I don't know, it's not that obvious, I guess. But if you look at any of the competitors' chassis, their frame, it's much more narrow than the Berrettin. I mean, you can look at the CO1 back here and see the width on it. And the they're heavy.
Yeah, they're very, very heavy.
And that extra weight and the thickness cuts down on the vibration, which, you know, in embroidery, vibration is crucial. Would you say it cuts the noise down too, being so thick?
It does. And, you know, something else too is, you know, we use a thicker gauge steel, and it's formed steel. We don't just take I-beams and things and weld these things together. It's actually made to form the chassis of the machine. Something else, too, that I see from other brands, and we're not going to mention any other brands.
Sure, we will.
Do the research.
I'll do it.
Do the research yourself. You know, some of the frames are bolted together.
Yeah.
You know, some of the chassis. And, you know, ours have always been welded, and they've always been heavy. And it's like your house. When you start with a good foundation, you start with a good chassis, you make it heavy, you take the flex out of it. That's another thing, especially as the machines get bigger.
Bigger and longer.
You know, the beams have to be heavier, thicker steel so they don't flex. Because if they flex, that's going to throw your needles off to where your sewing quality is going to be terrible. And then you mentioned something about vibration. Vibration is killer on an embroidery machine because it shakes the electronic parts. Electronic parts don't like vibration. And it could shake the electrodes and the diodes out of their sockets. That probably makes no sense. I probably just made that up. But the boards and everything too, if they're not seated properly, or just let's just say they vibrate out of place. And trust me, the old machines that shook so bad, they tended to have a few more electronic problems just because they vibrated so bad.
Yeah.
And also too, the electronics back then weren't as sophisticated. And it's what they, you know, what they are now. So,
yeah. Thanks, Steve Jobs. Yeah. So that's kind of point number one. And it seems pretty obvious to me, but again, going over these things, I think it's important.
Well, I mean, the chassis has to support the sewing head, of course, and also has to support the pantograph.
Yeah.
So if your chassis is flexing or vibrating, then that's going to transfer over to your pantograph too. So all this stuff, you know, starts from the bottom and works its way up. So that's probably the next point you're going to, maybe.
Talking about pantograph?
The pantograph.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good segue there.
That was.
Yeah. Thank you.
I spaced out a little bit, but I'm with you.
Okay.
So we'll talk about the width of the pantograph. So if you look at the pantograph on our machines compared to the competitors, ours is much wider, which will excuse you, Excuse me. Yeah. It'll allow you to sew heavier goods. There's less flex. And actually, no flex with the pantograph.
Right.
What else?
Well, and when he's talking about the width, he's talking about not the width from side to side.
Right, from front to back.
He's talking from front to back. So, again, when you've got this pantograph that's wider and better supported, it not only do you worry about flex from side to side, but from front to back, too. And trust me, that when you put on a 6-head or an 8-head or a 12 or 15, when you put those cap drivers on there and the cap drivers are heavy, mm-hmm. They weigh probably a couple pounds a piece.
Yeah, probably.
So if you've got six of them on there, that's
12, a lot of weight.
That's 12 pounds on that machine that it has to move before you put the cap frame on there and before you put the cap on there. So, you know, it takes a heavy duty pantograph to eliminate the flexing and to sew at speed and to keep the registration accurate. And again, it's part of what makes a Bairdon a Bairdon.
And it's top mounted as well.
Yeah, the other thing is it's top mounted. So if you probably can't see it on the CO1, but maybe you can. The mounts on both sides, the CO1 only needs two. I think a 2-head has two. I think we go to a 4-head. I think there's three.
Three.
But the pantograph is mounted or it's attached to the rails, and we have more supports than our competition does. And again, better support, less flexing. And the object is to have the machine sew faster with perfect registration. That's mm-hmm. what we're going for. And I just dropped my pen.
Yeah, if you think about, you know, if that pantograph were to flex, let's just say you have a piece of luggage on the thing, that's going to lead to poor registration in your design because the pantograph's moving out of the way, essentially.
Yeah, it can't, if it can't support what it's sewing, then, and you try to sew at speed, then it's going to slow down, not on purpose, but it's going to hold the pantograph back to where the sewing heads want to go faster than the pantograph does. So something else too I want to mention, and I wish you could see it, but the bearings that hold the pantograph shaft and the bearings on each end of those supports where the belt goes, they are pillow block bearings.
They're Sounds
extra,
comfortable.
Extra large, and they're sealed. Yeah, you don't ever have to grease them, but they also offer extra support and longevity as far as the pantograph goes. And we don't talk about those bearings, but if you look at the bearings on a Bairdon versus, you know, brand X, you can see there's a huge difference. So
yeah. And then you got a note in here about the belts too. So the the belts for the pantograph are thicker and then wire reinforced.
Yeah, they're wider for one, and then they're thicker, and they're toothed. Mm-hmm. Did I say that right? They have a little toothed. When they go on to the shaft that drives the pantograph, and we're talking about there's a belt that makes the pantograph go from front to back and side to side, which is called an XY axis. If that belt stretches over time, then again, you're going to have poor registration. So one thing Bairdon has always done with these belts is, I can't remember, they use a proprietary material for the belt. And I can't remember what it's called. I used to have one that I carried around in my bag all the time. I don't know where it got off to, but it also has wire reinforcement in it, mm-hmm. which, again, you don't want that belt to stretch.
Right.
I know. We stock belts for really old machines because these belts, man, they last a long, I'm talking years. You rarely break a belt. The old machines, they will probably stretch a little bit before they'll break. And the old Bairdons had more like a serpentine type belt that went through pulleys. But on the newer machines, or the compact bridge machines for sure, the belts are shorter and they are less likely to jump a tooth or stretch. So, you know, that's another thing too, to keep your, you know, machine sewing for as long as you can with as few problems as possible.
Yeah. And it was brought up too. I think Earl brought it up, like Meriden's being overbuilt. Which, I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, that's what I would want.
Well, I mean, they could cut corners. There's no doubt about that. And they could buy cheaper motors. They could buy cheaper parts, cheaper bearings. But they don't. That's one thing they do not do is try to cut corners. As our competition has made their machines lighter, and they're using smaller motors. They do tend to cut corners. I think Baredon has taken, well, I don't think, I know Baredon has taken the opposite philosophy, and they've made things bigger and beefier and heavier. And again, it's all about stitch quality and longevity. I mean, look, these things aren't cheap. No embroidery machine is cheap. No commercial embroidery machine is cheap or inexpensive. Some of them are cheap. But you want this thing to last as long as possible, and you want to get a return on your investment. And I really, really think that's where we shine. You know, I was in, you're not going to believe this, and I should have taken some pictures, but I was in Alabama last week.
Yeah.
Was it last week? And there's a big automobile car mat manufacturer in Oxford, Alabama. And they actually make the car mats, which is really cool that we've got somebody in the States that's actually making something.
Yeah,
but they cut the carpet out, they bind it, and some of them get logos put on them. You can get your name put on them or custom logos. But they had UF 5 needle and UG machines. They had 19. I should have taken a picture and let you put it up on the screen because people don't believe this. I couldn't believe
it. You should, yeah, you should have.
When I went in there, they were running floppy disks.
Where did they get them?
I bet
one floppy disk is like $50.
I don't know. They get them. He just said, well, yeah, they're getting hard to get. I'm like, I imagine they are. But they do have their designs backed up on a hard drive. Because I said, God. Please tell me that this is
they're
not
like, nope,
the only
we're doing it this one way. No, we're going to rely on this until it dies.
But one of those machines, the oldest one was a 1984 model.
That is insane.
And it was still sewing. And it wasn't sewing garments. It was sewing through through carpeting.
Yeah. You know, I bring that up a lot about, you know, people sewing floor mat, car mats. Mm-hmm. And people are like, that machine will do that.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah, it will.
Absolutely. We've got, there's a company in Birmingham, Alabama. I can't think of their name right now, but they sold a lot of car mats down there too. And these old machines were making an amazing stitch. I mean, it was crazy. And now these machines were flat. They weren't tables. Yeah. And they had the big sash type pantograph or sash frame, a portal frame. Yeah. I'll get it out here in a minute. And the way that they attached them was they welded little spikes onto the pantograph and onto the sash frame, and they
punched it on there
to hold it. And the designs were, you know, they were probably sewing, probably the smallest one was probably 15,000 stitches.
Wow.
And some of them were like 30,000 and 40,000. I mean, it was very beautiful embroidery. They had four of these machines in there. Now, I will tell you this. All of them were six heads. And some of the heads weren't running. So that was the reason that Phil and I went down there to talk to them about new machines. They realized that they're living on borrowed time with these 1984 model machines.
Yeah, it makes it tough to sell new machines when machines last forever.
And
yeah.
And you know what? We had talked. I remember these people. They came to a trade show 4 years ago, and was talking about machines. And they told me what they had, and I'm like, "That's
impossible."
No, they don't. They just think that's what they have. So on the way down there, Phil and I were talking, and I said, "What they must have N series is 2000, mm-hmm. 96 to 2000," and I'm like, "They probably have." He said he couldn't remember what they had. And I said, I remember something about them having like UG or UF machines. And that's a 5 needle and a 7 needle. Mm-hmm. Round. It's the round
head. Yep.
And I'm like, there's no way they have those. So we go visit them and we go back into, first of all, we looked at took a little tour of the factory there where they make the floor mats, and they took us back to the embroidery room. And I'm like, I could hear them from like 50 feet away because those machines are loud.
Yeah.
And I walk in there and I'm looking and I'm like, this is impossible. They had four, They had five machines. One of them was dead. They were using it as a cadaver. They were
like just scrapping parts off, off of it.
And then the other four were, they were all six head machines, but they were only running two heads at a time. Some of the heads were down. So, I mean, that's to be expected. A machine that old.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
they got their dang money out of it.
I mean, that machine's 28 years old.
Yeah.
Still running. And they're just like, yeah, we've had hardly any problems out of them. And I said, well, mechanically, you can get parts for them. We still have some of the mechanical parts. But electronically, he said, yeah, we're worried about that. He said, but we keep these in a climate-controlled. It was in an air-conditioned room. And he said, we keep all the dust out of here. And he said, man, we keep them clean. And they were clean. They were extremely clean. But, man, you guys, whether you buy a machine from us or anybody else, you're kind of living on borrowed time with these things. And they say, oh, yeah, we know it. That's why you guys are here. But, I mean, they could probably do more. Well, there's no probably. They could do more production with fewer heads.
Mm-hmm.
So, like right now, they have 10 operating heads. And, you know, I did a little bit of quick math. They could probably get by with 3 6 heads, which would be 6 heads, and get more production. Some of these machines didn't even have trimmers on them. I'm not kidding you.
It's like just manual trim.
It's like going into a Bearden museum. No, they would, you know, when they were done sewing, they would just hand trim them. But I was, you know, Phil and I were talking. He said, "Man, that embroidery was beautiful," and they had a display out in their waiting room, their car mats. And we asked the guy we went to see, you know, did this come off the Bearden? And he said, oh, absolutely. And I'm not, if you would have told me they came off of a UF or UG machine, I would have said, there's no way. But they did. Proof is in the pudding.
Yeah. Well, when and if they do get new machines, they're probably going to be like, look at this technology.
Yeah, the operators probably won't like it. I hate this new stuff.
That usually happens though. Like if you've got if I'm in a shop or something, somebody's been there a long time. They get used to one operating system, and like they upgrade to the new K series. I gotta learn. You know what I mean?
We've had this conversation before about this industry, and this is not derogatory. I'm kind of the same way too. I don't like change. I like things staying the same.
Yeah.
When Windows goes to version 7 to 10, I get so aggravated. I'm like, because I can't find anything, can't find my files the way that I used to search for them, no longer works. They always go in there and they change Word, they change Excel, and I'm like, I feel like I got to learn this stuff all over again, which really ticks me off. So I can understand how operators feel.
Plus, you know, it's a lot of, even though it doesn't exist, muscle memory operating the automat. Like,
and you could tell these ladies that were running these machines knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
They knew. They had a method, and it worked, and they turned out really nice embroidery. Now, could they be more productive? Absolutely, they could be more productive. No fault of theirs. It's just because the machines, those machines were sewing at 550, 600.
Yeah.
And
that's probably dimed out.
Yeah. And none of them could hear because it was so loud in there. I'm joking. But when you, and both, there were three ladies in there that worked there, and they had been there a long time. One had been there for like 20 years. And they're like, you know, we know how to run these. And they were nervous about getting new machines. Mm-hmm. One of them, you know, sided up to me and said, well, how do these things, how do we get designs in there? And I was explaining the thumb drive.
You're not going to believe this. Yeah. It's not a floppy disk.
They knew what that was, but they're just like, yeah, we like the way that we do things here. And I said, well, there's nothing wrong with that, but those are going to die.
Yeah.
And the one lady said, well, they keep telling us that. But then Monroe, he was their technician. He said, he keeps fixing them. I'm like, well, I'm going to kill Monroe. So.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. It's hard to sell machines when they last as long as they do.
No. And honestly, I never see machines that old from any other brand. Never. I mean, I've been to tons and tons and tons of embroidery shops that have all different types of machines. Mm-hmm. And just that I hadn't seen, you got a customer up in Baltimore that's got some BEAT machine, BEAT machines up there with a round head. I can't think of who they are. can't think of their name, but they run some old machines too, and take and
is it
BJ's? Isn't it BJ's? It,
yeah.
BJ's Custom Embroidery.
Yeah,
she sent me pictures a couple years ago of those machines, and I'm not kidding you. They look like they came out of the crate. That's how pretty they were. I mean, they were clean, and the tables, you know, they're flatbeds. Mm-hmm. The machines used to be that grayish. You've seen that color that we used for so long before we went to the blue, but they had a really pretty blue table on them. It was just, it's almost like, looked like marble from a distance. You know, it had that little pattern in it. I don't know where the Japanese got that stuff, but must've got it on sale. Maybe at Walmart.
Walmart wasn't around then.
No. Oh, well. Yeah.
Sam Walton.
Sam Walton was around.
He was, but wasn't at Walmart.
Well, that's debatable.
Yeah, so how did we get off on that?
I don't know, but that was a pretty good tangent. And just I like seeing these old machines, but it makes me nervous too because, like I told them, and I don't want to scare the folks. I mean, I just and they know they're like, yeah, we got to get machines because I don't know. Maybe they will run forever. I keep saying they won't. Maybe they will.
It's possible.
Yeah,
but that's a gamble.
Yeah,
you imagine? I mean, they both go down. You're dead in the water.
Well, that's the thing is. I asked the VP there, I said, "You guys have a plan B if these break?" He said, "No." I said, I would have a plan B if it were me.
Yeah.
You know, he said, "Well, our plan B is to get new machines." And then I'm like, "Well, you need to kind of get on the books now because it's going to take a while to get them." They're looking at two heads. So, but it was a really good trip. And we also, I'll just tell you about this trip a little bit because it was two things. We have a customer in Anniston, Alabama that makes flags for the military, and they have these gigantic wide field flatbed machines that make military flags. They even make the flag for SpaceX.
Never heard of it.
I think it's a movie.
It's SpaceX, not Space Force.
SpaceX. Isn't it SpaceX?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the space shuttle or something?
That's Elon Musk's thing, isn't it?
I don't know. It's got something to do with the government because it's a government contract.
But I thought SpaceX was Elon Musk.
Maybe it is. Maybe it was Space Force. What is it?
I don't know. Space Force. Space Force is real.
If you saw their flag, you would know what I was talking about. It's really nice. It's got like eagles and stuff on it.
I love a good eagle.
Planets.
Yeah.
But
what? Eagles can't fly in space. Why put that on there?
I think these can. I think they had like astronaut helmets.
That's SpaceX's logo. So a bald eagle with a helmet.
NX. That's what I saw. I don't know. Maybe I was getting the COVID right about then.
COVID brain.
I was hallucinating.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. You're having fever dreams.
It's flat on the machine. So yeah, I was getting a different perspective.
A beautiful eagle.
It could happen.
Yeah.
It could happen. If a human being could last in space with a helmet, why couldn't an eagle?
So those...
Can you imagine how fast the eagle could fly in space, though?
It would die.
It couldn't, could it? Because there's no
gravity
air.
There's no air. Resistance.
No resistance. They could just... They were just sitting there flapping their wings. I'll tell you what would happen.
Please tell me.
Is they would have this helmet on.
Uh-huh.
And they have an oxygen tank, right?
Uh-huh.
And they flap their wings and not go anywhere. And they would get so tired. Because, you know, an eagle's like... They're proud. They're like, you're not going to stop me. I'm going to go.
Right. Yeah.
And they would fall, and they would get so tired and breathe all their oxygen, and they just die.
That's terrible.
It is terrible for the eagle.
Yeah.
Anyway, my point to this is, it's cool to see things you don't normally see. And these great big flatbed flag machines, wide field machines, are amazing to me. They're amazing. They got one they have a 12 head wide field, and then they have a two-head wide field, and I can't remember how it sews like a 48 by 48 sewing field. And look, they're not cheap, but if all you're doing is flags, because it allows them to clip the flag in there and sew it all at one time instead of moving it around like you normally would have to do with a smaller sewing field. So and then the 12 head was sewing regiment flags, and these are really ornate with all this, I don't know, like metallic thread.
Mm-hmm. Eagles.
Well, it had feathers on it. I didn't see any eagles. I saw feathers. I'll show you a picture.
You got a picture of the eagle?
No, they wouldn't let me take a picture of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Pretty. Why not?
Well, I mean, somebody see an eagle with a helmet and a jetpack on.
But isn't it it's a flag. It's going to be flying somewhere. So why could you not take a picture of it?
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm going to look up the SpaceX logo when we get done. I think I know what you're talking about. I think it's Space Force.
Maybe it is.
I don't think there's an eagle involved.
There probably isn't. I may or may not. I think the COVID was getting to me then. I was starting to hallucinate.
Yeah.
I did see eagles, but I'm not quite sure if they were wearing helmets.
You ever seen an eagle in real life?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. On the Mississippi River. I'll tell you where I saw. There's a bunch of eagles.
In space?
No. I was up around the Iowa-Minnesota border. What's the name of that town up there? Cabela's it's where they're, I don't know if they're based there, but they have a big, well, maybe their headquarters is there. They got
Cabela's
a bunch of our machines there.
Hmm? Cabela's headquarters is not there.
Maybe it's not Cabela's. It's one
I think Cabela's headquarters is in South Carolina.
Mm-mm.
You sure?
No.
You're not sure?
No. I can't think the name of the town. Anyway, it's on the Ohio side of the...
Ohio side?
Mississippi side. Oh, on the Iowa side. What is the name of that?
Do you know how a map works?
Yeah, I do. It was on the Iowa side of the Mississippi River. We were in Minnesota, and we were going south to cross over. I can't remember the name of this town. It's La Platte or La... Anyway. You can see trees there, dead trees, and these big eagles' nests in there. And you can see these eagles flying around the river. I was with Steve Elias, and he was showing me the eagles. Man, they are absolutely cool. I've never seen one other than maybe in a zoo.
I was trying to think, as much as I've been in nature, I think I've never seen one.
They're majestic.
They're not around here, are they?
Eagles? Mm-hmm. I think they're everywhere.
Are you sure?
Yeah, they're in like all 50 states.
I don't know about that. That's the national bird, right? Mm-hmm. It was going to be a turkey.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. Ben Franklin, I think, said
what an idiot.
I don't know, man. You ever eat an eagle versus a turkey?
You can't eat an eagle. If somebody catches you eating an eagle.
Well, think about this. If Ben Franklin had his way,
we'd be eating an eagle on Thanksgiving.
You'd be like, man, I want me some eagle so bad. I can't wait to have it. Like, can you imagine the sandwiches you would get out of a leftover eagle?
Not much. They're very lean birds.
Turkey's good. I like turkey.
I do too. I haven't seen an eagle in real life. I don't want to eat one either. They're protected. You can't do anything to them.
Well, we're talking. We're hypothetically, if it would have gone the other way, they wouldn't be. We would be eating them, and people would be like eating them. They go to the store. And what you getting at the store?
And instead of
some bologna, six pack of beer, I think I'll get a couple eagle drumsticks,
eagle nuggets.
Yes, eagle nuggets.
Could you imagine the Space Force flag with a turkey and astronaut? gobble, baby.
Yeah, I could see that more than I can an eagle. I could see it.
They're so ugly. Turkeys are just the ugliest animal.
Yeah, I don't know what. Maybe I don't. Did they smoke weed back then? Maybe Ben Franklin was smoking some ganja.
Probably got into some peyote.
Maybe so.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. We'll give you a little history.
Yeah,
there's a dang eagle on that flag over there.
Yeah, look at him. He's got his wings spread out. Look how majestic he looks. Can you think of it? What would a turkey do? I could see a peacock being a national bird more than I could a turkey.
Yeah.
Peacocks are pretty.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there one in your neighborhood?
A peacock?
I'm pretty sure. I remember this from, like, childhood.
Somebody had one?
Yeah.
It's possible, I guess.
I saw one randomly in nature. In the woods one time.
No, they don't grow here, do they?
It must have been a pet that got loose. It was, yeah. Down in Montgomery County.
Well, you...
Say no more. Say no more, fam.
All right. Yeah.
Shout out Montgomery County. Yeah. All right, we're moving on. Anything else about the pantograph? Whenever the belts.
No.
That's probably it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just do yourself a favor and look at any other pantograph on a machine, and you'll come to respect the thickness.
I'll let that go.
Yeah. Alrighty. Let's go over the motor, the three-phase motor,
and I think,
on the multi-heads.
I remember at the sales meeting when Earl mentioned this motor, everybody was just...
Ooh, and on.
I don't think they realized how big that motor is.
That was when it was kind of like,
wow,
we take this for granted.
Yeah.
And then talking about another person's motor.
Yeah.
How small it is.
Yeah, these are either Toshiba or Mitsubishi motors, which are made in Japan. But, you know, it's not a cheap Chinese knockoff motor. It's actually a reputable motor, which it's a common motor, too, and that you see in industrial machines.
These like pressure washers and things like that have them.
Well, the big industrial ones are, I can't, what you had the specs on the motor. It's a three phase. It's either half horsepower or
three
quarter horsepower.
Yeah. Three quarters on four, six, eights. I think only the two head, the KY2 head has a half horsepower. Everything else above is three quarter. Pretty sure.
No, I think the forehead uses.
Nope.
You sure? You might be right.
I'm right.
Okay. I'm not going to argue that point.
Three quarter horsepower, 4.68, half horsepower in KY2.
But that's a big motor. Physically that thing is this big around.
Yeah.
And about that long. And the drive shaft goes right into the pulley on the end of the machine.
Yeah.
Now the KT machines are all servo driven. They have servo pantograph motors, as do the multi-heads, but they also have these three machines and the KT2 head have a servo-driven drive motor.
Yep.
That drives the sawing head and the hook. So, and if you know anything about a servo motor too, servo motors are small. They're AC versus DC, and they also have a lot of torque. And The problem always with servo motors is they get going really quickly, but they're hard to stop.
Right.
So when you turn the power off of them or try to slow them down, they want to override. And that was always the problem when we went to servo-driven pantograph. It was hard to get that pantograph to stop.
Yeah.
Because the motor has so much torque, it wants to keep going. So once they harness
the power of the sun,
servo, that's because servos can move in a much smaller increment than a stepper motor can. And that was the big deal with the servos. Why we wanted to go to servo is even with the stepper motors, our stitch quality was excellent. I mean, it was second to none, but we wanted to get it even better to make even a smaller stitch. And the way to do that, to move that pantograph, would be with a servo motor. And it was tough. There was a lot of trial and error. I remember when they were trying to put servos on the machines, and you know, they didn't have the electronic technology back then either. But now everything, all the panos on every machine that we make, I think the Chenille machine still uses a stepper motor because it doesn't make a really small stitch.
Right, right.
So I think it still
makes sense.
And I wouldn't, you know, if you held a gun to my head, I wouldn't even swear that was the truth, but. But the servos are, you know, they're quieter, they're faster, all that good stuff. But yeah, that big drive motor on the multi-heads is pretty impressive. And again, it's overbuilding them. Could they use smaller motors on there? Absolutely they could. Could they get a cheaper motor? They sure could. But it's nice to know that that motor. I asked Earl when we were at the sales meeting, I said, do you remember the last time we lost a motor? And he said, I think we've lost one in like 25 or 30 years. He said, that's just something that doesn't go bad.
Yeah, and he was talking too about another manufacturer's motor, and it's like
really small,
about the size of a hockey puck,
and tiny. And again, I think a lot of, well, I don't think I know a lot of our competition has cut corners. You know, they put smaller components on their machine, and why do they do this? They do it to save money, but they do it at the when they do that, the stitch quality and the longevity of the machine suffers. So, yep. What's next, Brandon?
Sewing head.
And we have made the SH sewing head since I remember we prototyped it in 2007, 8 or 9, somewhere around there. Maybe 2010 it was prototyped because I went to Cleveland to see it when it first came over. And for us, it was a big deal because one knock against the old sewing head was that when the stitches got longer, the machine had to really slow down. It couldn't keep up to make these longer stitches. And it was the jump drive mechanism. So that got completely revamped and changed, along with a couple of other things in the sewing head too. But that allowed the machine to on the longer stitches, it doesn't slow down like it used to. So again, it's more productivity. The machine's going to sew more pieces at the end of the day instead of having to slow down. So you didn't have those big jumps like you did
right.
on the previous sewing head. So a couple of other things they did to this, a machined aluminum block out of one piece of aluminum, one block of aluminum.
Aluminium.
And if you ever take the cover off of a Bairdon, you can see the machining marks on the, which to me is pretty impressive, where I'm telling you, I've looked at a lot of these other machines and they use almost like pot metal to make these.
Yeah.
The thing about that sewing block, when I say the block, I'm talking about what's behind this cover right here that holds all of the needle bar drivers, the springs.
All the parts.
Or the needle bars, all that stuff goes in there and it has to be precision. You know, one thing is you don't want that needle bar to move in that block. It has to be, within thousandths of an inch, small or even smaller than that. But if you look at that block and you physically grab one of the needle bar drivers, it has no shake or play in it whatsoever. None. Matter of fact, when it first came out, we had some issues with it, with them getting stuck in the block because they were so
too tight.
And, we had to go back and replace not a whole lot of machines, but, and part of it too was, some of the customers weren't oiling it. Now, one thing I will tell customers whenever they get a new Bairdon, and I always do it when I get one, and I've told you this too, you got to really keep those needle bar drivers in the first month. You got to really keep those things oiled because that tolerance is so tight. Mm-hmm. And if it's not lubricated and it gets hot, it will freeze that needle bar in that block. So you'll see me at shows. I'll reach around and I'll feel that little sponge back there where it is to make sure. Yeah, look at there.
Look at all that oil.
Look at the oil. I may over oil them, but that's I always oil the hook and I oil the needle bar drivers when we're running them at a show, running them all day. I just make sure. And I probably over oil them. I know I do, but... Once it gets broken in, it's fine. But the first month or so, I pay particular attention to those. Another thing they did too was what Bairdon did in the S head is they made the needle bars lighter. And you wonder, well, why would they do that? Because there was nothing wrong with the other ones. Well, by making a lighter needle bar, you're taking less weight that machine has to move.
Right.
So. I think that there's some titanium in there or some stronger metals that
adamantium
that stiffen up that needle bar and make it lighter. And it does a couple things. It's less weight for the needle bar driver to have to move. And the other thing too, it quietens it down just a little bit too. So that was a big thing that they did. And again, they didn't cut corners. They made it better than what it was. And it cost them more to do that, to make those that way. Another thing that we have that we take for granted is the electronic thread locks. Just about all of our, I think we're the only company that uses electronic thread keeps on the.
I think.
If you look at the threads, you can run your finger across them and it doesn't pull them out. That's because we have electronic locks that locks the thread into place. Our competitors use mechanical locks. Mm-hmm. We tried mechanical locks in 2004 on the 9 needle XL and it did not work. What I mean by mechanical is it was like two pieces of metal that were bent together that put pressure on it and kept it locked. Well, that worked fine for about a week. And then after a while, that metal would loosen and expand, and the thread would come. So what that meant was when the thread came unraveled, and we're talking the needle right next to it, it would slowly, after a while, unthread that needle. So when it changed colors to that needle, you would have a false thread break because it wasn't threaded. So that's what the thread keeps do. They keep that thread nice and tight. They keep it from pulling out of the eye of the needle. So when it moves over there, it unlocks that thread and lets it sew. Then it locks the other one. So I think that's pretty ingenious. And we've had electronic thread locks. And we had them on the Y heads, the round heads, and still do. But nobody, to my knowledge, I can't remember anybody ever having electronic thread keeps on their machines.
Yeah, I don't know. I know
a lot of our competition used to make this faceplate out of metal, and they would put magnets on there, a little magnet. You got them with the machine to keep that thread tight, because if it's loose, it's going to unthread itself, basically. So, you know, you what you have is a single needle machine pretty much, because every time it changes colors, you've got to rethread it.
Yeah.
So we eliminated that problem. And again, it's going the extra step or the extra mile, something that nobody else does. What else we got?
What are you talking about on the sewn head? The color speed or color change, the quickness of that, which has gotten faster and faster. And how much faster can it be?
Yeah, we souped it up when the SH head came out. And then I think about 3 years ago, they changed the cam and the color change gear and made it even go faster. So if you watch this thing change colors from needle one to needle number 15, it flies across there. And again, it's designed to keep the downtime, color changes at a minimum. Same thing with your trims or your cuts. They're faster. The Mark 8s are so much faster than the Mark 5s. It cuts it quicker. And at the end of the day, it equals more pieces. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, productivity is what we're looking for.
Yeah, that's one thing we were kind of got mentioned at the sales meeting too, is how much better can it get? You know, it's like it's getting so, like, there's just minute changes that happen now. Like, I don't think there's ever, I can't see how there'll be a giant leap in technology to make it much better.
Well, you've got thread that is going to hold you back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're, could manufacturers make thread, I guess, stiffer or thicker or less likely to break? Could they do that? Yeah, they could. But then you're going to run into issues of how's it look on your garment?
Right. Or how does it feel?
How's it feel? It's going to be stiff like wire. Yeah. The other thing is with modern embroidery machines with trimmers, it's going to wear your blades out quicker.
Right.
So there's a fine line there. And I think the thread manufacturers know this too, that they could probably make thread that's unbreakable.
Kevlar.
But it would also be uncuttable too, mm-hmm. you know, probably. So thread is always going to be the thing that fuels the embroidery machine, the actual thread that you're using. No matter what brand, as long as it's a good reputable brand of thread, I mean, they all have pretty much the same characteristics. You know, there's a little bit of difference in rayon or polyester, but it has to be able, the machine has to cut it without, you know, getting out a pair of shears and whacking it. I mean, because you've got a really small, intricate trimming system in any embroidery machine. And if you've got some heavy duty big thread in there, you'll notice when I sewed that big thick cotton thread, the machine, it cuts it fine.
Yeah.
But it's thicker. But again, if you don't change your hook timing and pay attention to your trimmers and use a bigger needle, it poses a lot of problems. Yeah. So, and you cannot sew it as fast. Even though it's thicker, it is more prone to breaking at higher speeds just because it doesn't have the tensile strength that a rayon or a polyester has.
So, I hate that thread.
I don't like it either. Now, the company that I did all that testing for, I told them, nothing against the brand that it was, and I'm not going to mention the brand because it's very good thread for what it is. It's really a decorative thread.
Yeah.
It wasn't made, and that's why I explained to the customer, you know, this thread is decorative for logos.
Right.
They wanted to do names with it.
Yeah, letters and names.
And because the thread was thicker, when they took a name that was digitized with the density in the underlay for polyester thread,
right.
You looked at it, it jammed those threads in there. So you have to digitize
For the thread
in this instance. And once they saw what the polyester looked like, they were like blown away. Now, I know they wanted a dull finish. Mm-hmm. So I know Madeira makes like a frosted mat, so that they're going to go that way. So, you know how frustrated I was. All our new cuss words trying to sew that stuff. And I've sewn it before.
Yeah, it was frustrating. Well, it didn't look good.
Well, I had to change needles. I had to experiment with two different needles, tensions. I had to experiment with tensions because I wanted it to look good. And I knew when they told me what they were going to sew, and I think I told you, I said, man, this is going to be a pain in the butt because Polo Ralph Lauren uses this thread on our machines just right up the road here in High Point. But they don't do names with that thread.
No, it's
logos. If you look at their names are done with polyester thread. Yep. But their logos are done with this thread.
And like the polo bear. He was
He was made out of this thread. And it's a nice, decorative, artsy, fuzzy look. But I don't want that on my shirt. I don't even have a logo on my shirt.
You could fix that.
I could sew me one with some of that thread. So I'm not knocking that thread. And everybody knows who Polo is, and that's what they use. But
it has applications.
It does have applications. Yeah, and you cannot sew it like you, or digitize, or use your digitized files to make this thread work because it just doesn't look good.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a thread tangent for you.
Yep.
You know, something else that people talk, let's talk a minute about ramp-up speed. And what I mean by ramp-up speed is when you push the button on the machine, and we're talking any embroidery machine, it has to... it makes the first two or three stitches and you make sure it catches the bobbin, then it takes off. Something that Baradin has really worked on in the past 4 or 5 years, 6 years is the ramp up speed on these machines. And what that means is it gets up to speed. Let's say if you're sewing in 1,000 stitches a minute, it gets up to 1,000 stitches a minute really quickly.
Yeah.
Where other brands, they'll make 25 or 30 stitches and gradually get up increase. To speed. We get up to speed quicker and we slow down quicker too. So you may not think, well, what's the big deal with that? Again, when you're talking seconds, at the end of the day, it turns into minutes, minutes turn into hours, and it's more productivity. So I know a lot of people get hung up on sewing speed. Your design is going to dictate how fast that machine sews. Your machine, I mean, how many long satins are in there?
Yeah.
Because any machine has to slow down. But again, we've improved that ramp speed and the jump divide, which gives us an advantage as far as longer stitches. We can sew them faster. So at the end of the day, you're going to sew more stuff on our machine than you will on any other brand.
Yeah, everybody kind of gets hung up on the speed thing.
Yeah.
And it is. It's very, it's going to vary by design and garment. I mean.
Yeah, there's several things that go into it. Everybody wants to sew fast. They do. But at some point, there has to be a trade-off between the speed and the quality of the stitching. Now, if you've got a design that's sewn that's digitized really well, the right way, you got good material, it's hooped correctly, good backing, and your machine's tuned up, running well, you can sew these machines very, very fast. I mean, it's not unreasonable to sew these things at 1,000 stitches a minute. But... I've gone into shops where people say, well, the sweet spot of this machine is 850 or 900 or 950, just because we seem like we get more, productivity out of it. Now that may be because the operator didn't have the tension set correctly. But I think it's like your car, you know, your car, your truck may go 120 miles an hour.
It won't.
I don't think mine will, but does that mean you're going to drive 120? No, you're going to drive 50, mm-hmm. 45, 60, whatever the speed limit is.
And it's changing too. I mean, it's not, yeah. It's not a constant thing. Like right. That's what people think. Oh, it's 1,000 stitches per minute. It's constantly changing.
Well, and I think that's where Baradin did a really good job too, by addressing color change, trimming, making all that stuff quicker too. Yeah. Ramp up speed is because, like you said a while ago, it's a point to where, how can you make these machines so faster? If you've ever seen we used to go to the bobbin show all the time, and I used to be fascinated by all these specialty sewing machines, not embroidery machines, I'm mm-hmm. talking sewing machines. There was a machine at a bobbin show a few years ago, well, a long time ago. We haven't had one in 20 years. But this machine was sewing like webbing, like parachute straps. Mm-hmm. And it was an industrial sewing machine. It just made a straight lock stitch. And that thing would go, brrr. I mean, that thing was probably sewing 5,000 stitches a minute, but it was just sewing in a straight line. It wasn't making a design. It was yeah. using this thread to hold these two pieces of straps, this webbing together. And they had a really big needle in it because this stuff was thick. Mm-hmm. And I asked the guy, I said, hey, man, do you ever break a needle? He said, oh, they'll bend before they break. I don't know if that's true or not. But it was fascinating to watch this. And I'm like, well, why can't an embroidery machine do that? Well, because you've got a pantograph moving mm-hmm. this way and this going this way. This guy would just, this demonstration, he was just sewing
a straight line. Yeah.
So, and I joke around and say, well, this is nothing but a fancy sewing machine. And the concept is a locked stitch sewing machine. But still, yet you've got a pantograph that's moving around to make a design. So, yeah, there are limitations of what you can do. And I don't know, are there more things coming out that we don't know about? I don't know. Japan doesn't. They'll let us know a little bit about what they're doing. But,
it's very secret.
Well, I think networking is the next thing, is design transfer. That's going to be the big thing from here on out. You know, there's going to be a time when you're going to pull up a design. You'll be able to go to Dakota website and pull up a design and say, oh, I want that design. And you'll be able to send it to the machine and teach the colors and sew it.
Yeah.
That's going to happen.
It is happening.
Okay.
Remember, I'm working on it.
You're working on it.
Yeah. No, I've it can't be done right now.
It will be done.
Yeah.
And it's what it is, you know, embroidery software is so specialized, and nobody knows what a stitch file is until you get into the embroidery business. It's a stitch file is a proprietary file. It's almost like a CAD file. It uses an X, Y mm-hmm. axis. It's not a graphics file. And it drives me crazy when people come to show and say, well, what can I put a PDF in there? No, you can't. Well, why not? My printer does that. Yeah, your printer uses ink. This uses thread. So you got to think, if you have a 5,000 stitch design, it's poking 5,000 holes in a different direction.
It's pretty
and
amazing.
A piece of material. Yeah. It is amazing. That's why this is so fascinating. I understand how a printer works because you're just spraying ink on something. And I understand you can control the flow of ink and the width of it, and you can make a design with it. You just can't do that with an embroidery machine. But I think that's what makes embroidery look cleaner, crisper, and much more expensive than printing. And I'm not knocking printing. There's a place for printing. But yeah. I think embroidery is more better.
More better. But yeah, that is good. That is the next jump, is the technology side for networking and design transfer. A good time to plug the Bluetooth manager.
Yeah, I meant to mention that at the beginning, but the Bluetooth manager is available. Contact your sales rep, or you can call us. We can sell it to you.
we'll sell it to you.
We have it in stock. We have the Bluetooth manager in stock. And for $4.99, you're going to get two of the receivers.
Call it what it is.
Yeah, whatever those things are.
Dongle.
Dongle, well, whatever. And you're going to get the software. And we support it. If you have any trouble getting it loaded or whatever, we call our tech support. The directions are really, really good, though. I will tell you that. I was looking over them again this morning to see if we could do anything better with them. And Sam and Earl mm-hmm. made a really nice video. So I encourage you to go on our Baredon YouTube channel and look at the Bluetooth manager. Now, it's only for the K series, the newest machines. It will not work on X's or anything older. So keep that in mind. Another thing is you have to update your machine software.
Yeah. What is it?
7.1, I think, isn't it?
I think there's a new update now. I think it's 7.2 just came out this week.
They may be putting that machine software on the USB stick they're sending too.
I would imagine.
Yeah. I don't hold me to that. But if you need to update your software, it's on our website. You can go on our website, go to technical support, look under software, and there's software updates for all the machines. And there's instructions how to do that. It takes probably about 10 minutes to update your software. But your K-Series machines, and then the K-Series coming out now, they're being manufactured now, which you'll get sometime next year.
2040.
They're coming out with the updated software, but updating the software is a piece of cake. All you need is a USB stick, and there's instructions there to walk you through it. But you do have to have the latest version of machine software before you can use the Bluetooth manager. But yeah, I've used it. I was probably one of the, I don't want to say a naysayer, but I was hesitant. The first version that came out of Bluetooth, I didn't like it at all. So we put the kibosh on that. But this newest or the updated version, which has more Bluetooth capability.
Does it have more Bluetooth?
Wouldn't you think? I mean, that's the whole idea, right?
I never understood the term, like
Bluetooth.
Yeah. I don't either.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means. Probably should know that.
I got Bluetooth one time when I ate birthday cake with that blue icing on there.
That'll do it.
Remember how you get your tongue and your teeth blue?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. But yeah, check out the Bluetooth. I do not have it up on the website yet. I apologize. We have had trouble with our website.
Yeah, the website's been down.
Our host has been having issues with it. So as soon as we get that fixed up, hopefully next week I can get it on the website. But
yeah, and we'll do a video of Bluetooth manager in action, because got the instructions up there, but seeing how it operates, I think would be a good thing.
I thought the thing that Sam did had it on there.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm saying, like, we'll just shoot something. Like, this is the whole process.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that. Yeah, we can do that. So, yeah, we've tried it here, and it works well.
Yeah, it's really cool, and it's affordable. I think it's great.
Up to 7 devices.
Devices.
Does not mean 7 machines.
Does not.
Keep that in mind. And that is a Bluetooth limitation, is it only allows you 7 devices. So what does that mean? Well, if you're...
Are you going to start naming devices again?
No, I'm not. If your computer... does not have Bluetooth capability, then you'll have to put the little Bluetooth USB thing in there, right?
Dongle,
whatever you call it. I call it a transmitter.
Which most laptops now.
Yeah,
are.
The new ones, the newer computers all have Bluetooth on it. But let's just say if your operator is Bluetoothing her music on
Beats
her headphones off of that computer, then that's one device is taken. A mouse.
You're doing it.
A mouse.
You're doing it again. If you have 2 mice.
Mouse. Let's pretend that this phone is a mouse. And
a keyboard.
It's a Bluetooth. If this mouse is Bluetooth, guess what? That's a device taken. A keyboard. If you have a keyboard, we know what a keyboard is. If it's Bluetooth, then, and it's hooked into that particular computer, that's a device taken.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind. So it's meant for small shops, 2 or 3, 4 machines. And 2 mice at the same time.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I dig it.
Yeah. So let us know if you want more information on it. Like I said, it's the Baredon YouTube website has a really good video that Sam did on there.
Yep.
Shout out to Sam. He did a great job.
Shout out, Sam. Shout out, Earl.
All right.
Shout out,
continue.
Everybody.
Let's get this wrapped up.
We're going
along. Another thing we have is proprietary electronics. Designed by Baredon. Our partner company is Unitech Electronics in Japan, and they are a huge electronics company in Japan. They make electronics for other things, but they also make electronics for us. We use a Linux-based system. It is not a Windows-based system. And the advantage to Linux is we write our own operating system. We don't take Windows software and turn it into embroidery software. So that gives us a huge advantage. The big advantage is we can make changes on the fly to our software. We control the updates, not Windows. So if we know there's an issue with the machine software, Unitech will jump right on it and get it done.
They do it all the time.
They've done that several times. That also makes our networking, which is proprietary to Berrydin, it talks to the machine. The machine talks to our networking software, so it allows you to pull a lot of information off of the networking software that you couldn't with, let's just say, a third party, because it is proprietary, and I think that's a huge deal. So some of the Windows-based softwares, if you're in a lot of machines, I think most machines use Windows-based software.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is any other Linux operating system?
To my knowledge, no. Everybody uses, and the reason they use Windows, it's cheap. It's a cheap way out. You know, they buy the industrial license for it. And I always thought that using the Windows software is a compromise because it's, I don't think one software can be all things to everything. This, you know, there's, you can make an argument that I'm wrong, but we'll have a duel. At sunset.
is that when duels happen?
I think they do.
10 paces and
fire. Isn't it at sunset? Aren't they? It wouldn't be a sunrise, would it?
I can't tell you the last duel I saw.
The Quick and the Dead.
In real life.
Oh, love that movie.
Yeah.
Sharon Stone, Gene Hackman. Love it. Good movie. At the end, she shoots a hole right through him, which is not true. He's got sunlight coming through him. I'm like, dude, can you really do that? That's a Mythbusters.
An episode?
Episode, yeah.
Was it really?
No.
Because you want it to be.
I'd love to. I'm sure
that doesn't,
somebody,
that show doesn't exist
anymore. The sun doesn't shine through you.
No, it's guts and blood.
Yeah. No. But anyway, in this it does. He looks down and he sees the sunbeam. Yeah. I'm like, that's so cool. That should happen. You should get shot and a sunbeam come through you. Don't you think?
I don't think so.
You drinking a beer?
This stuff sucks.
Is it that mango?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why I got mango. I forgot this was a treat, and I hate it. Yeah. I like this brand, but not this flavor.
Yeah.
But it's zero sugar.
Tangent. Again, Linux software gives us an advantage. And we write our own. Again, we do not rely on Windows for that. So keep that in mind.
Gives us the power.
The power. Let's finish up. We're running, whatever.
Don't like it, turn it off.
Yeah. A couple other things we have that our competition does not have is a split presser foot. And what that means is if you look at any other embroidery machine, the presser foot comes down and goes out and has a hole in it where the needle goes through. So when you break a thread, you have to thread the needle and then you have to thread the hole in the presser foot. With Berrydin, you thread the needle. And as you thread the needle, it goes through the back of the presser foot. So it's much easier to thread.
As easy as threading a needle can be.
Yes. Yes.
We all struggle.
I hate threading needles, but sometimes I'm really good at it, and other times I'm not very good at it.
It's sometimes you get in a zone or a stride, and it's like just bam, bam, bam. And that's rare.
I can be at a trade show, and the machine breaks a thread. Nobody's around. I can thread that thing like that. If somebody's standing over my shoulder,
crap.
I'm telling you, and I've heard people say, well, that looks really hard. I'm like, well, that's
it is right
you're
now.
You're watching me. And I don't know why it's like that.
I'm the same way. I'll fall apart.
Yeah.
It's like, I know how to do this.
I know what it
believe
is. I get nervous, and I'm going.
I can't see it.
Well, I definitely can't see it. But I do the poke. The hunt and poke method, and hope it goes.
You've done that a lot of things in your life.
It goes in there. All right, let's talk about a couple last things, and we'll get off here. Double height hoops. If you look at the Barrington hoops, they're taller than our competition. They do not flex. They are very rigid, which is what you want when you're framing up
heavy They break before they flex.
They will break before they flex. But if you break them, you know what? You can replace all the parts. You can replace. There's five parts to a hoop. There's the hoop itself, the ring, the thumb screw, and two clips. All of those can be bought individually. And I don't know if the competition does that or not.
Build your own hoops.
You can actually do that. So I think that gives us a big advantage. And one thing, the last thing, is heavier hoop arms. I meant to take this off and show people, but they are
cast
aluminum, and they're heavier than our competition uses formed or bent steel, really thin, that tend to
sag
a lot. If you look at that, you can even hear that Barrington quality right there.
What, is just broken off of there?
And it's the same ones on this machine that we use on all of our machines, no matter what size machine. Now, the single heads have a fixed sash on it, but again, they're much heavier and bigger than what our competition is. So there you have it. That's
one thing that I'd want to go over at some point. Maybe. I think it would be good. It's just going over the cap frame and the cap driver.
Okay.
I think that would be good. I just thought of that. Because that's something I didn't even put on the list, but that is a huge.
Well, there's a video. There's a video on my cap framing video. Mm-hmm. I kind of show that.
What do you mean?
The heaviness.
Cap driver. I'm just saying we didn't even include that on the list. No, and that's big deal.
Well, let's talk about it.
We'll save it.
Okay. We may have a guest next time. I think Charles Reeves is supposed to come over and take me to lunch. I haven't seen him in a while. I haven't seen him since before COVID. I want to get him on the podcast. He's got a lot of time in the industry, and from a supply, get his thoughts on supplies, where the industry's going. You know, he travels a lot and sees a lot of shops. He sells thread, backing, all that type of stuff. So he worked for A&E for probably about 25 years.
Not the TV show. Not the TV station.
No, the TV thread channel, company. TV, thread, American and Eford.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to get him on here. We were going to go to lunch the Friday that I got back from Thursday. No, the Friday I got back from Alabama.
What happened?
I had the germ.
The vid.
I had the germ. Yeah. So he said, "Well, I'll just come on over." And I'm like, "No, I don't feel like it." No, I'm just kidding. So anyway, he told me. He said, "Let me know when you get better, and we'll." He likes the diner down the street here.
Oh, who doesn't?
Yeah. And I'll tell you what he's going to get.
Breakfast.
No, every time.
Let me guess.
Chicken salad. He gets
not a chicken salad. Like chicken salad.
Yeah.
Not a chicken salad. Two different things.
No, he gets chicken salad on a salad. Yeah. They take a scoop of chicken salad and put it on lettuce.
That's odd.
No, it's not. That would be chicken salad, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it is. That's what I was saying. Chicken salad.
Oh, I see what you're saying now. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It's strange.
Well, how else will you eat? I mean, I eat it with crackers.
Sandwich? Chicken salad sandwich?
Yeah.
Tuna salad did you in last time?
Well, I'll tell you what I usually get when I go there is if you get chicken salad, you get two scoops of chicken salad. Or you can get just tuna salad, or
you get chicken
a scoop of chicken scoop and scoop of tuna. That's what I usually do.
That's nuts.
That's not a good mixture. Mm-mm. Yeah, that will give you the burps and the indigestion. It will. Yeah, it's not good.
Do you like chicken salad with fruit in it?
No, I like it. Wait a minute. With grapes?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Grapes
and walnuts, or almonds.
I like nuts in it, but I can't stand when they put daggone.
Like apples
on a salad or strawberries. I can't stand that.
What's that? Waldorf salad. Is that?
That's a dessert. Fluffy. Yeah. That stuff's good. Waldorf Watergate salad.
Yeah. I do like that.
I got, last time I was at a Wegmans.
Oh, I love Wegmans.
Well, I got a, I don't know how many pound tub of Watergate salad and ate it, got sick on it because I ate so much of it. That's terrible.
What's that fruit salad that people, I mean, mom used to make it, or maybe Sharon made it, had the apples and the nuts and the grapes and like Cool Whip and all that stuff in it.
Cool Whip?
Yeah. What is that? What is that called?
I don't know. I know what you're talking
about. Fruit salad. I call it fruit salad. Nobody makes it anymore.
You can request that.
No, there's too many other good things.
Like your chocolate.
Chocolate chip pound cake.
Oh, man. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, you're weird.
I don't like chocolate. So.
Chocolate chip pound cake is decadent.
I know you love it. Mm. I just don't like it.
That's my
chocolate.
Birthday cake. When my birthday comes around, my sister says, what do you want? There's two things. Boston cream pie, which nobody knows how to freaking make.
I can make one.
No.
Okay.
No, nobody knows how to make one. You know, you remember when we got those lobsters? Mm-hmm. That had the Boston cream pies? Oh.
Yeah.
No, wait a minute.
Nobody got them.
Nobody got them.
You got them.
You know why?
You ate them.
In my freezer.
Yeah.
I ate them. I did. Nobody got a bite.
Yeah, I like, but that's chocolate, but it's mixed with other stuff.
It's like, is it pound cake? With
I don't really know what
cream
kind of,
a cream filling, and then it's covered in chocolate.
But my favorite cake is a red velvet cake, and that's a chocolate cake. It just doesn't steam.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
It's
the frosting,
cream cheese, right?
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah,
it's like Mexican food. It's all the same stuff.
God, I love
it. It's how it's presented.
Yeah, those tacos I got at up in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man,
where were we?
That place right by the hotel.
Yeah. Abuelo's or something like that.
No, it's, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, that place is hit or miss.
It was good. Yeah. I got those, I don't know how you say it, birria or however you say it.
Oh, those things were good.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's like, you've had food envy when you get something and somebody gets something and you're like.
No, I'm usually the cause of it. Like, anytime I go somewhere, usually I get something that, people are like, I should have got that. I wish I'd have got that. It happens to me more times than not. I don't know why that is.
Well, I wish I'd have got what you got. I got, when I go to
Phil and Brandon did.
When I get
off of my recommendation.
When I get Mexican food.
It's usually fajitas.
Yeah, it's, I don't even look the menu. I'm like, I want fajitas. Mm-hmm.
It's a healthy choice.
That's why I get it.
Yeah.
Because it's got the vegetables and the meat. I don't get tortillas.
We know what fajitas are.
Yeah. But sometimes I want to put cheese and all that other crap in it. Mm-hmm. That place up there, I know what it is about their fajitas. They put tomatoes in there.
You don't like tomatoes?
I love tomatoes. I don't want them in my freaking fajitas.
I don't want
them mushy, man.
Oh, I love it. No. It's like a steamed or a...
I love peppers, onions, the meat. Keep your
tomatoes
out of my fajitas.
Yeah.
Or I'll go postal.
Keep your tomatoes out of my fetus.
I love tomatoes. I love them. There are times when
they're not appropriate.
No, they're not appropriate. I don't want them in my chicken salad either.
Yeah, I just was like, these sound good. These whatever these tacos were, and it wasn't a healthy choice.
Was it beef?
It was slow cooked. It's supposed to be smoked.
You didn't answer me.
I said yes. It was slow cooked. Yeah, it said smoked brisket. It was neither smoked nor brisket.
You gave me a bite.
Yeah.
It wasn't brisket.
But it was delicious.
It was like roast beef.
Yeah. It was like a pot roast is what it was.
But I will tell you, with Mexican food, they can take the cheapest piece of meat.
Yeah,
and
like
make
skirt
it
steak.
Absolutely delectable.
Yeah.
It's
a gift.
Man. I guess, I don't know how they do it. I don't know. It's so good.
I agree. It's hard to go wrong with Mexican food.
Yeah.
John Kuhn will tell you. He's been to every Mexican place from probably Virginia all the way down to Florida.
Yeah. He says he likes Mexican food.
He does. We went and got it. It was good.
I like it, but not as much as he does.
No, he loves it. I do too. It's my choice. It's an easy option. All right. Maybe we'll do that. Podcast on like cab drivers, cab frames.
Yeah, and we'll get Charles in here next time too. he may come next week, and we'll go to lunch. And while he's here, we'll just get him to. We'll do a podcast with him.
Sure,
I think he'll do it. I think he's out of the witness protection program.
He you might want to ask him.
I may have to ask him first.
You just volunteered him.
I better wait, because that's not really his name. because he's in the witness protection program.
WP.
Yeah, I think he knew John Gotti or had something to do with those guys or something. So
mafia ties.
But I think isn't there a statute of limitations?
It's statute.
Statute of limitations that runs out on that as far as witness protection or no. Mm-mm. Yeah. He may be risking his life.
I heard a story. I think somebody made it up. I think it was a joke.
Most stories are lies anyway.
They said they were in the witness protection program like 3 times because they kept like...
No, I don't believe that.
Yeah. Kept getting... They'd like get a job and then whoever he was hiding from... I think I heard this on a podcast.
That would suck, man, because all your life to be looking over your shoulder. Because mm-hmm. you would think somebody's going to find... Because if you're in the witness protection program, you did something pretty heavy to somebody. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. It's usually people like rat
they're
on...
They're usually gangsters and...
Yeah. People like rat out the mafia and stuff.
Yeah.
And
I wouldn't. I'd be like, I just go ahead and shoot myself. That way I know when it's going to happen instead of living in fear.
Yeah. Good point.
Well, that was a tangent.
Next week on Mafia and Fajita Talk. Yeah. All righty. We'll jump off of here.
Sorry about the tangent.
Yeah. I think this was a good one.
Yeah. No, if you've got any questions about, you know, something we left off or maybe that you'd like to hear more about, please let us know. If you've got any podcast ideas about witness protection programs.
or space turkeys.
Or space turkeys that wear jetpacks. Yeah. Not jetpacks. Jet propelled. Oxygen. Jetpack would be cool.
On a turkey?
Oh, jeez. Could you imagine that?
Yeah. Okay. They're hard enough to kill as is. I don't want to shoot them with a jetpack on them. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Everybody left comments in the last video about this topic. So
yeah, we do appreciate it. Any input that you give is good or bad, whatever. Please let us know. And thank you so much for watching, listening. It's podcast has taken off a little bit and, mm-hmm. We do try to keep it embroidery related, but man, life's too short to be.
Yeah. It's fun. I like just cutting up, but
well, I mean, we don't take ourselves that seriously
at all.
I mean, we love what we do. We love our product. We know we have the best product out there. We're here to help you answer your questions. We want you to be happy with Baridin, but we have a little fun doing it too. So these podcasts are fun. I love doing it with Brandon. I'll say hello to Sarah.
Yeah,
she'll probably never watch this, but do you think she'll watch it?
Mm-hmm.
Think so.
Yep. But we miss you. We miss.
Yeah.
It's weird sitting on this side of the table. But
it's
we
weird
we'd switch
sitting
it up.
Facing the camera. Usually I'm like facing her.
Yeah.
So.
Now you get to look at me. All right. We'll see you guys on the next one. Thanks again. Go like, subscribe, comment, leave a review on iTunes if you will. And we'll see you on the next one.
Thanks for watching, listening.
Adios.